Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com. Hey, Third Wave ska aficionados. Today's guest is Colin Clive, guitarist for the Grand Rapids, Michigan ska punk band, Mustard Plug. Together, we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan favorite hit, Beer, taken from their 1997 album, Evil Doers Beware. I've known Colin and the Mustard Plug gang for 30 years now. We go way back, and it was so cool to catch up. Colin mentioned this was the first time that the band had ever ventured out of their home state of Michigan to record. And for this project, they went all the way out to Fort Collins, Colorado, where they enlisted the help of producers Bill Stevenson and Stefan Egerton of Descendants fame. This was a new and improved Plug. The recording sounds exactly like the band does live. And considering the fact that they had been playing Beer live for the previous 4 years, really helped when they went to capture it on tape. Colin, self-admittedly, doesn't know exactly what the lyrics are about, as lead vocalist Dave Kirschgesner wrote them. But he does know they're not about beer. So what are they about, you ask? Well, pop yourself a cold one and find out.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
Colin, we've known each other a long time.
A very long time. If you really want to go back that far, it's a long time.
Well, I got to tell you something. You know, Mustard Plug, you guys just posted online. You've been posting some, like, facts, like how many shows you played and, you know, the cities you played the most times, etc. And the last one I saw was bands that you played with. And Les and Jake, I think we were in, like, the top 10 or 15. We were, like, you played 40 shows with us that you were able to calculate. I know that, like, 30 of them were on the Ska Against Racism tour that we did in April of 1998, and I went back and looked at that schedule. It was breakneck, man. Like, we were running 10, 11, 12 shows in a row, no days off.
Yeah, it was crazy stuff, for sure. Yeah, a lot of those bands in that top list, it's all from that, like, a lot of them are from that tour, so.
You guys formed in 91, which is really early on the spectrum for ska punk. You know, certainly there were bands that came before that, but it was definitely early in the, what if you want to call it, the third wave ska. I heard of you through another Michigander, and I'm from Michigan originally. I know you know this, but my friend Brent, and for the Les and Jake fans listening, we did a song years ago called Son of Dick, because that was his father, and we wrote a song about Brent. But he told me about you guys. He had come down to the University of Florida, kept talking about this band, Mustard Plug. He had seen you all over Michigan. I know Detroit and definitely Grand Rapids. He was from Ludington.
Okay.
That's not too far from you, right?
I actually grew up in Ludington, as a matter of fact, so, which is another an odd fact. I went to school there, yeah, so that's funny.
Odd fact. And he had this yellow cassette. Was that Skapocalypse Now? Was that maybe what that was?
It had to be that, because that was our first release. Was a demo, and it's kind of turned into an actual album, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Right. And the first, what I considered your first full length, was 1993's Big Daddy Multitude.
Yeah.
And when that came out, it was like the next thing I knew, you guys were being talked about in the same breath as, you know, a lot of the other bands that were coming up at that time, you know, the Boss Tones, you know, the Fishbones and different things. And if you can recall, do you remember where your first show was?
I mean, I can look it up. We have a very extensive show archive.
Well, not even where, but like it was in Michigan. Michigan, I'm assuming, around 91.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I mean, like our first show was like at an open mic. It's not really a show, but we got kicked off. So that's a pretty good story. We played like a song and they're like, nah, you guys got to go. So, but I'm sure it was in Grand Rapids. It was, I'm sure, our first show of some sort.
Do you recall the first time we played together? Because I want to say I think it was Chicago.
I'm saying it's either Chicago or my memory is when you guys were coming up and we set up a few shows. I remember we threw a barbecue for you when we got to Grand Rapids.
Yes. Okay. That was...
I think we did that multiple times, but that I feel like that might have been one of the first ones. And I think Ypsilanti might have been in that run of shows.
And that, yeah. Was there a place called the Mosquito Club?
That's Detroit.
We played there and then we played Ipsy. We played whatever the venue was there, and maybe it was with you guys.
Cross Street Station might have been...
That was it. Cross Street Station. I have it in my first diary.
Crazy.
You know, I used to keep a diary of dates. Yep, Cross Street Station was the place. And, you know, I went with beer today with you guys. Initially, I went with Mr. Smiley, which is one of your most popular tracks. But I went with beer because of the working relationship that you've had with Bill Stevenson since then.
Yep.
He produced the 1997 record Evildoers Beware, which Beer appeared on that record, but it was a re-recording.
It was a re-recording. I actually dug it up today because I was talking to Dave about this, and it was interesting because the original recording had a different bass player. So it was before our horn player, Craig DeYoung, had moved to bass. So there was a different, so it was actually played slightly modified by different players also. So it's kind of a, I didn't remember that until yesterday. They will not take it all away. How did you guys get hooked up with Bill, being from Michigan, and he was all the way out in Fort Collins, Colorado, and certainly there's great studios in the Midwest. How did that transpire? Basically, they had just started recording bands relatively around that time, so early 90s, and I had gotten a hold of the Alligator Gun album, which I thought sounded fantastic. Like, to me, I was like, the production on this is so good. And there was a few other albums. Hagfish, I think, might have come out right around then.
Yeah.
There was a few albums that they just put out that really, like, caught my ear. And were like, whoa, these sound super good. And obviously being humongous Descendants and all fans, you know, put those two things together, awesome studio and our heroes. Like, yes, of course, we want to, like, go there. Where else would we go? So basically, all was on tour, and they came through Grand Rapids, played just, like, a small bar. And we went, and I remember giving, I don't know if it was Stefan or Bill, I think it was Stefan, but I gave somebody like whatever we had, Big Daddy Multitude, I guess at the time, and maybe the cassette or whatever. And I was like, hey, we're looking to record. Would you ever do this? You know, is this a possibility? We didn't know. And we're just from this small town in Michigan and we don't have anything cool. So we're like, I don't know. We'll just try. You know, these are like, you know, legends to us. So it's like, What do we have to lose? We'll give it a shot. So we gave them our stuff and they kept in contact. So it was cool.
Well, I feel about the same way. You know, just prior to that Ska Against Racism tour that we did with you in 98, about a year prior, we went out with Descendants on their Everything Sucks tour. It was the Caffeine Nation tour. And to be out there with your heroes, and all these years, we've had Bill mix some projects for the band, but we never recorded with him until this last December. We went out and did some songs. We haven't released them yet. But I got to tell you, after doing this for a couple decades here, I haven't been pushed in the studio like Mr. Bill Stevenson pushed me vocally. I mean, he clobbered. I mean, clobbered me. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because the band that I hear on this track is not the band that I last saw. The last time I saw you guys, and I think one of the things that I really noticed was Dave's vocals, because Bill just beat you up, you know, and Dave was just kind of ragtag, and back in the day, he wasn't really a screamer, you know, but wow. Talk about that a little bit. How did he elevate you as players?
Yeah, I mean, it was exactly that. I mean, it's like Dave and Bill like got along really good. You know, Dave, you know, has his kind of unique style of singing, you know, it's, you know, which is what always my favorite vocalists are the ones that are, you know, have something new they're bringing to the table. So,
yeah,
you know, he doesn't necessarily follow all the rules or whatever. Like, you know, he's got his thing and that's cool. And so working with Bill, it was awesome that, I mean, they really clicked and Bill was able to like push him like crazy and like really bring out some stuff that, you know, a lot of people else wouldn't be able to communicate that with, you know, or to have that, you know, level of trust. You know, I think Dave having this admiration and you know, of Bill and what he's accomplished, and then just Bill just being a rad dude that's like super down to earth and he feels like your best friend, put those things together, really like gelled, and was able to like coax a lot of stuff out of a lot of him. And then, you know, that echoes to all of us. I mean, it was just, they definitely don't let stuff fly, you know?
Yeah.
Like they'll make you do it.
I got to tell you, you know, I've been recording my vocals for the past probably 12 or 15 years with Roger. And there's times when, you know, he would make me want to run a mic stand through the drywall next to me, drive me crazy. What do you mean? Do it again. I sound closed off my mouth. I don't sound open or whatever he would be saying to me. And Bill was just like 50 times beyond that, to the point the other producer we were working with, Jason Livermore, of course, you know, Jason, we were in the other room and I was in the vocal booth for about 4 hours this first day. And he's like, how bad he beat you up in there. And I just kind of smiled, you know, as I was thinking to myself, man, if that was 20 years ago, I don't know what I would have done, you know, but I'm able to take it now. And I got to tell you, I feel like he made me a better singer this last time. So old dogs can learn new tricks.
Yeah, it was the same as us. Like we were just there a year ago for our new record, and yeah, just like even me. Like I mean, there's times that Bill will be like, "You're so good. Like you're a good singer. Everything's perfect." But then there was stuff that he was just like, just punishing me. Just like he's like not letting anything fly. And there was even a song that I ended up, I just bowed out and I made him come in and do it. And he ended up like, it was just a couple of words, but he ended up coming in like, I got Bill to track some vocals on our records. So that was good. We'll call it a trick, you know, I don't know.
Well, the album you're speaking of is your newest record, Where Did All My Friends Go? It sounds awesome. Came out on Bad Time Records in 2023. Recorded and produced with Bill at the Blasting Room. 8 full-length albums in total, which is awesome. You know, the fact that you guys, much like us, you know, I get up now, and I could probably speak for you. I get on stage and I just kind of pinch myself. I'm just thankful that people still want to hear this music and still want to come.
Yeah, yeah.
and have a good time.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, we were just in Denver this weekend and it was a sold out show. It was us, Save Ferris, and Catch 22. Sold out before we got there, and just like people are just having a blast, and you know, it's incredible. It's like I can't imagine that I'm doing this, you know, 32 years later still, you know.
I know it's and there's so many more things that I still look forward to. You know, my kids haven't seen me play yet. They're 7 and 6.
Oh, cool.
You know, I can't wait to look in the side of the stage and see their faces, you know. So there's constantly things to look forward to. But I haven't talked to you like this in a long time. I could talk to you for 2 hours, not even get into the song. We're going to get into the song right now.
Cool.
From the album Evildoers Beware, released March 18th, 1997, produced by Bill Stevenson and Stefan Egerton. We got to include Stefan. It was produced by him. Came out on Hopeless Records, and this was the record you were actually touring on when we did Ska Against Racism. The track's 3 minutes and 40 seconds, and I went back, Colin, the demo, well, I'm calling it a demo, the first recording was 3 minutes and 28 seconds. So this one was a little bit longer. I didn't notice too many differences. There was a couple words here and there that were changed, and the ending sounded a little bit different, but for the most part, it was the same track. But the one we're talking about now is off of Evildoers Beware, 3 minutes and 40 seconds, 8-bar intro. The first 4 bars are distorted stereo guitars. They're pretty fuzzy almost like a Big Muff or something on them. You know, I was surprised to go back and listen to this. I hadn't listened to the studio recording in a while. I was like, wow, those are pretty fuzzy. The second half is a drum tom and snare fill while the bass guitar is hitting single notes on the chord changes into chorus one, which basically starts off the song after the intro. About this, you know, they had done some records out there at the Blasting Room, but by this time, Bill and Stefan had recorded a number of records, other bands, their own bands. They were still learning. They were nowhere near the producers they are today. But when you rolled in to Blasting Room in 97 to do this record, did you basically just set up your live rig and they mic'd it and you went, or were you using their gear?
We were using their gear.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think everything was... Actually, one of the things I was trying to track down information, and maybe you have it, was one of the pieces of gear that I was super excited about was apparently one of the amps I got to use was from Milo Goes to College, or was the amp that they used for that album. Because that was my first punk record. So I'm getting to play that amp for like my sound or partial of the sound was just mind-blowing. I actually messaged Bill today to try to figure out what it is because I swear I saw it last time I was there, and I can never remember what model it is or anything. But I think it's still there, but Bill...
Oh, wow.
But Bill, he couldn't remember either. So, and I have a message out to Stefan to see if he knows, but it's gray. That's all I remember. But everything they have is gray, so I don't know.
Well, and as you know, they got a ton of gear out there now.
Yeah,
so many different amps. And we went through them and talked about a lot of them, but I don't recall one being for Milo Goes to College. I probably would have remembered that. I started to say a minute ago, you know Bill loves you. And the last night we were out there, real quick before we move on, we were doing a playback to make sure that we got all the backing vocals and all the bells and whistles. And at some point, somebody said something. I don't know what it was, and it was about Mustard Plug, and I said, oh, screw those guys, and Bill flipped around in his chair. He goes, what? Those are my boys. And I'm like, we're just kidding. Like, those are our boys, you know? And Bill, I don't think Bill realized the you know, longevity as friends that we've had together. Certainly, we know that you guys are tight, but,
right.
You know, I think he holds a lot of, you know, admiration for this time period. You were one of the bands that came out there and, you know, one of the bands that gave him a name early on. But right after this intro, we're into chorus one, 11 seconds into the song. We're in a chorus. We get whoa-ohs with gang vocals. And then the lyrics are, don't let them take it all away. We get another whoa-oh-oh gang vocal. It's getting harder every day. Another gang vocal. Brothers, sisters, hear me say. And another gang vocal. Whole band is in here. Drums, bass, and those big stereo guitars I was talking about at the top. On the second line, after the whoa-ohs, the first lyrics we get, don't let them take it all away. The guitars go to a little octave run there. And I don't recall that. You know, how many times have I heard you play this song live?
Right.
But that was pretty cool. We had talked, I don't know, maybe a week ago when we were setting this up, and you said, well, hey, I could talk to you about the music, but you know, Dave wrote the lyrics. I said, we've had that plenty of times on this show. But if you were to kind of decipher these lyrics, basically he's just, you know, don't let him take it all away. Is he talking about the beer?
As a matter of fact, he is not talking about beer. So
he's not.
The song is actually has nothing to do with the liquid beverage whatsoever. So that's a little known fact. So
what a better thing to write about.
I know.
You know, we wrote about beer, right. Real Big Fish had a song, Beer. It's like the perfect thing for a ska punk band.
Right. Yeah. That was a working title for us. I think probably because it sounded like a beer hall, drunken woes and stuff. Like perhaps, I guess I don't remember why we called it that, but yeah, it's not about beer whatsoever. So I do know what it's about, sort of. So I mean, in general.
We'll get into it when we get into the verse.
Yeah.
Do you recall when you got in the studio with Bill? I mean, was he interested in hearing the first recording you did? Had he heard it? And was there anything he wanted to do different in the song lyrically? Or do you remember changing any parts around? Because again, I didn't hear too many differences arrangement-wise from the original recording.
I'd be hard-pressed to think that he didn't listen to the original one. I'm sure he did. He's really pretty thorough with, like, you know, your demos and stuff like that, even back then. But I don't recall change. I mean, I should have listened to, I pulled up the 7-inch. Ta-da! I pulled it up today, but I didn't listen to it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's much differences, but I don't recall him really changing anything with it. I mean, there's certain songs we've done that I do know that he's suggested changes or whatever, but this one I think was straight up.
I think there's also a familiarity sometimes when you've been a band that's been playing a song for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's in your back pocket, and you go in, it's like, wow, it's kind of flawless at that point. What could you change? So I'd be surprised if he did change stuff to it. And again, I didn't really hear many differences.
Right. Yeah. Having this been an existing song, and we'd already released it, I think we were probably pretty set on, like, this is the song, you know, sort of thing. So
what was the reason that, and I know the reasons that Les and Jake has recorded songs that we recorded in the past, but why this particular track? I mean, I know it's a live standout. I mean, I've always thought of this as your anthem, Mustard Plug. It's kind of like your bro hymn from Pennywise. It's the whoa-oh that by the end of the song, the whole audience is singing. But whose idea was it to re-record the track?
We had just gone in after Big Daddy Multitude, and we had like four songs, I think. Two or however many on here. Two on here, and then two more, one on a comp. We re-recorded Dressed Up, which was also on Big Daddy Multitude, and then a different song called Pickpocket, which was on here, and I think there was one other song. So I think we were just trying to, like, we had kind of honed our what we wanted to do from Big Daddy. Like, Big Daddy has some funk, and, like, we were kind of exploring all of our influences and things we liked. And by the time we started writing these songs, we had kind of just focused a little more on, like, the punk ska stuff. Like, that was kind of what we felt most comfortable doing and enjoyed the most, you know, being punk rockers that like ska, you know. So I think it was just like, when we put it on a 7-inch, there was probably always the intention of it, like, existing beyond that. We just put it ourselves and was like, here's what we got right now until we can do something else. So
that's interesting. I've never really heard anybody else say that. And that's the same exact reason very early on that we would do that. I kind of knew, like, this is a demo recording, or this is going on a 7-inch for, you know, some record label in Seattle, but this is a great song and we get a really great reaction live. Like, yeah, if we get signed to a label, we're probably going to re-record this again. And of course, this was right when you first signed to Hopeless Records. So I didn't know if Hopeless had something to do with that. You know, a lot of times labels be like, hey, this is your, look what this song does for you live. You got to throw it on the record.
Right. We actually recorded the album and the song, obviously the whole thing, before any talk with Hopeless. So the record was done.
No kidding. Okay.
Before any of that. This was strictly done. Yeah, this was strictly on our own. We paid for it. Like, it was just our DIY, like, let's just, we're, as far as we know, we're putting this record out ourselves sort of thing.
That's even a better story. I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then once it was done and, you know, talking with Bill and, like, I think it was this one. So then we got invited to play the Descendants reunion shows, or when they got back together, the Everything Sucks tour. So we got asked to play that. And then we were kind of scrambling, like, who's gonna, like, this is our big chance to find someone to help put it out. So Dave kind of just, like, was, you know, looking through magazines and whatever, like, asking people, like, for phone numbers and stuff. There was no internet, I don't think, at the time. So it's just,
yeah,
like, how do we get people to come out and see us and maybe put out our record? And Hopeless was, I think, there might have been one other label that came out, but Hopeless came out to that, so, to the show. And that was really our first communication with them ever, so. And the record was done.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, right off of chorus one, we're into verse one. Drums, bass, clean upstroke guitars are here. Trombone, sax, and trumpet are all in. I believe all three of those horns are in there, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely hearing trumpet and sax.
Yeah,
and
trombone. I would imagine they're all in. Yep.
I know that was the horn configuration you had at the time. And I wrote in my notes, Colin, it's busy as heck, but it's ska punk. It's supposed to be, you know, the horns are mixed left and right and kind of center. They're just tucked right beneath the lead vocal. I'm down on my luck. I'm on the streets. I'm at wit's end. I nearly been PC. They're taking my home. They're taking my wife. They're taking my job. And they're taking my life. But there's one thing that they will not take. But I will hold to the end until my dying day. It's I'm down on my luck. I'm out on the streets. I'm at wit's end. I've nearly been beat. See, they've taken my home. They've taken my wife. They've taken my job and they've taken my life. But there's one thing that they will not take, that I will hold till the end, until my dying day. Because it's part of me, and it's time that I say, they will not take it all away.
Not about beer.
It's not about beer. That's what I'm saying.
It's not about beer. So let's just get that straight. It's not about beer.
If it's not about beer, what's it about?
Basically, Dave was trying to, he was listening to a lot of like Sham 69 and a lot of like that. Well, they're kind of like street punk kind of anthemic, you know, catchy melodic punk sort of stuff. At the time, we were also giant Naked Ray Gun fans. So like the Woes are 100% a result of our admiration of Naked Ray Gun. But yeah, so the lyrics themselves, I guess someone had suggested to write a song about like Patty, don't take my beer away, or Copper, don't take my beer away. So the original idea was to write something about beer. But at that time, young Dave Kirchkeschner, who loved beer, but also, you know, classic punk rock, decided that beer was too silly. Like, I mean, us, you know, saying something's too silly is a little, you know, whatever. But
yeah.
But he made that choice, that decision at the time, and wanted to do something a little more anthemic, a little more general, less obvious, I guess, or whatever. So
this is the same band that your first bass player laid in a bathtub of mustard for the album cover.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
That was Craig, right?
That was Craig. Yeah. Yeah.
For those listening, that's the Big Daddy Multitude record. Check it out. It's pretty funny. There's a couple of, gosh, and I want to say that Bill said this when we were out there. I know that they use this a lot in hip hop. I think it's called like emphasis lines. And I'm calling these emphasis lines. There's one thing that they will not take, that I will hold till the end, until my dying day. The lead vocal on those two lines is doubled.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound doubled in the rest of the verse. And I love little things like that. You know, I forget about the simplicity of that and the effectiveness of that. And I don't feel that I use it anywhere near good enough in my songs sometimes. And it's really simple. It's just another vocal in those two parts. But I got to ask you probably don't know why, but why those two lines?
I don't know why, no. But I also sing them live. So, and I think it's just by natural. I don't remember studying how we recorded it. I mean, sometimes I remember like, oh yeah, that should be bigger or sound like this, but yeah, I don't know why those particular ones, but it feels right. So,
well, something else that's interesting, and maybe it's because there wasn't harmonies before on this song, okay? Mm-hmm. But around this record, you were starting to get into harmonies. For instance, the song "You."
You never told me why you were never around. You never told me why you were so popular.
You were harmonizing in there, and that was kind of something a little new for Mustard Plug at this point. So was there talk of running harmonies anywhere in this song, on a word here, a word there? I know it wasn't on the original version, but I thought that was interesting. There's whoa-ohs and gang vocals and emphasis lines, as I'm calling it, but no true harmonies.
I don't recall any talk of, any harmonies on mine. Typically, I think in the early days, we kind of resorted to that on like the songs that I sang lead on. For whatever reason, they're just kind of different styles of songs. But I think Dave going for more of a street punk kind of sing-alongy kind of thing just was really searching for like that basic melodic punk rock song without getting too fancy, you know, or whatever, polishing it up too much, which I think harmonies tend to do. I love harmony vocals like crazy, but you know, sometimes, especially at that point, that wasn't very punk, I guess, in our circle as much, or at least we didn't know, you know, or whatever. I probably didn't even know what a harmony was then. So, you know.
Why does it seem like no one's left? Why did they all...
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Colin Clive coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
And now, back to the show.
The next part's interesting. The next part reminds me of something maybe that my band would have come up with in the early days. These big distorted guitars come in for the pre-chorus. They come back from the top along with the drums, bass guitar, and horns to set up for chorus two. No one punished, no one drugged. And the reason I had said this reminds me of something we would have done. There's not much lyrically going on here. It's just kind of like a musical part before the chorus. You know, I think if we were to write this now, you'd be like, there's got to be more lyrical information. There's too many holes here. But let's talk about this part. First of all, do you know what Dave is alluding to here?
I don't think those are the words. I'm trying to figure it out.
They're right not?
Now. No.
That's what my producer wrote. Actually, I'm not going to throw Chris under the bus because went to a couple different sites and they all said that. And I thought that was an odd line. No one punished is fine, but no one drugged?
Right. That's not right at all. I'm trying to find a CD so I can...
I'm asking the guitar player for Mustard Plug to figure out the lyrics to his own songs right now. So
I think they're in that. They're in this. I can't believe I found our CD this fast. It's amazing.
He's actually opening the CD booklet.
It's actually not in the lyric book, so imagine that.
It sounds like no one punished, no one drugged. It does sound like that to me as well. I guess we're not going to know what Dave says there, which, you know what? That's fine, too, because listen, sometimes I laugh at this show because, you know, sometimes there's no rhyme or reason to things, you know, and sometimes it's fine. Sometimes it doesn't matter what you say.
Can I listen to it real quick? Just see if I can scrub to that part.
Of course. Of course.
Is not one pint and not one drop, and that's there you go. And he says it's not about beer. That's what it is.
not one pint, not one drop.
Yeah. So he does reference beer, but
I like that a lot better than no one punished, no one drugged.
I'm like, that is not in the words at all. So
okay, well, hey, we don't have to worry about it for pre-chorus too, because there's different lyrics there.
Yeah, it does say something different the next one. So.
It does say something different. Okay. Whew. So in the pre-chorus on the last line, after not one drop, we get this four chord descending kind of rundown riff that goes right into chorus two. But chorus two has clean upstroke guitar this time. We don't use the distortion like it was at the top of the song. And there's no horns here. Lyrics are the same exact thing as the top. We get the gang vocal whoa-ohs. Don't let them take it all away. Gang vocal again. It's getting harder every day. Gang vocal. Brothers, sisters, hear me say. And another gang vocal before we get in to verse two. I'm proud of the pavement. Thick and thin. Good times and bad. I just can't win. I've been beat up. Make it go. They sold it to my face. The whole beat of what they're being. It's crazy. Make it all mine. pounding the pavement through thick and thin. Good times and bad, I just can't win. I've been beat on, kicked on, insulted to my face. The whole bleeding world thinks I'm a bleeding disgrace. Yeah, they can own my body, but they'll never own my mind. They better face the facts, because now is the time. Till we all join hands and all of us say, they will not take it all away.
Sounds about right to me.
But it's not about beer.
It's not about beer, no. He's very adamant that it's not about beer.
But you didn't talk to him really about anything further than that, right, since we've spoke?
Not really. I had him send me just some little, like just a couple of things, which I mentioned, the Sham 69 reference and the street punk thing was kind of from him.
And the thing about that you said that, and I'm glad you brought it back up because I wanted to touch on it earlier. You guys never sound like anybody. You sound like Mustard Plug. I think that's one of the coolest things you could have as a band. You said it earlier, Dave's got his own style. But upon going back, you know, we all have influences and we all know who we were hanging out with and whatnot. And there's a part later in the song that I'll tell you kind of what I hear. But in these verses here, I never thought ever that Dave ever channeled anything like, you know, Dickie Barrett from Boston's. But I hear a little of that in here, you know, and it's kind of cool to go back and listen to that. But on this second verse, it's the same overall instrumentation as verse one. But on the featured line that was in verse one, we got two lines there, Colin. We only get one line this time. It's on, they can own my body, but they'll never own my mind. And on verse one, if you were to repeat the same exact thing this time, you would do the next line. They better face the facts because now is the time. But the lead vocal's not doubled there. Why?
I don't know. It just didn't feel right. It wasn't no. Meant to be.
And sometimes that's the only answer. And I'm, you know, anal-retentive to the point where, like, I like things to be symmetrical. I want this side and that side. I know I drive my band crazy. I'll drive them crazy with stuff like this. I'll say, well, the first verse, we sang the doubled the vocal on those two lines. We don't do it the second verse. And they'll just look at me and be like, so what? Does it feel good?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still write to this day like that. I mean, you all, as Les and Jake, are like, to me, harmony, like, aficionados. Like, you guys are phenomenal at it. Like, that's one of your amazing assets.
Thank you.
Us, not so much. And, like, when I still to this day write, I'm not, like, schooled in harmony. I don't know any. I literally don't know what I'm doing. But I write, and I'll sing with myself and just wing it. I still just say that I just sing something different that I think is right. And a lot of that sticks. We don't use it all. Some of my other bands, I use it. And it's weird because, like, Bill will even be like, what? That's not right. Like, you know, like, that's not a normal way to sing. Like, that's not, like, what you would normally do. But
yeah,
I've always kind of followed this philosophy of just, like, just do what feels right. I don't know. You don't have to follow rules all the time. So I get into trouble sometimes with that, but
no, and I do too. And the worst part for me is when I start to question myself, and that's why you're in a band. Sometimes you have to hand it off to the next guy and go, hey, I entrust in you as my bandmate to help me figure this part out. But the other thing, the last line, they will not take it all away. We get this lyric again. That's a hook from verse one. It appears here at the end of verse two. Before we get into pre-chorus two, same overall instrumentation as pre-chorus one. Different lyrics this time. Now you got me wondering if these are the right ones, Colin. I'm gonna run these by up.
All right.
No one push, not one inch.
That's not right. Not one inch is right. can I?
Yeah, listen again.
It could be that. It is not one inch. I don't know. I think it's, I don't know what the other one is.
I just thought no one push, like don't push each other too hard in the pit. I don't know.
It might be not 1 foot, not one inch. That would make more sense.
Not 1 foot, not one inch. Okay.
I'm going to go with that.
I'm going to have Dave come back and just talk about the lyrics, okay? Go. We got the music with you. I'll have to get Dave.
Yeah, I think it's Not 1 Foot.
Okay, Not 1 Foot, Not 1 Inch. That's what we're going with. On the Not 1 Inch line, Colin, the horns are here playing that descending riff with the guitars that time, but they're not going in fours, or it's an eights. It's bump, 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 bump on that part. And I love little things like that. That reminds me of... you know, again, early days sitting around and just being so excited to, you know, have horn players. I never thought I'd ever be in a band to say to somebody, hey, try this part, you know, and they would do it. And it's just like, just following the guitar chords, but it's just, it's something cool and kind of magical. Right after pre-chorus two, we do not go back into a chorus. We get a bridge breakdown for four bars. The band goes halftime, drums, bass, clean guitar. It's like a reggae feel. And this this feel continues for 16 more bars. Since the day I was born, I've been running uphill. I work my fingers to the bone just to get my fill. And they still want more. It's getting harder every day. Until there's nothing left, until they take it all away.
Not about beer.
Not about beer.
No.
This section, again, 16 bars, just drums, bass, and that clean guitar still, but the drums are doing some very cool fills here. The part is very lively. A lot of those snare flams and like splash cymbal, like quick hits. And this part in particular, do you recall, you know, maybe this changing from the demo? I know there was a little bit of differences in here, and or were you just kind of playing it the same as you were live?
Well, the thing with the drums, which I always thought was kind of a unique aspect of us at the time, was Nick Verano, who was our drummer. He also played on Big Daddy, Multitude. But he was like not like, he didn't come from any sort of really ska background at all. He was like a Primus guy and Rush and like,
yeah,
Clutch and like just wild drumming music. Like he didn't have a punk, necessarily like a punk rock background, more like industrial stuff, like all kinds of other things. He had a giant drum set like when he started, like with the rack and like, you know, the corral rack and tiny cymbals and all this stuff. But like if you listen to like even Big Daddy stuff and on here, like there's some unorthodox things that wouldn't normally exist in on a punk record sort of thing. And he would just throw those in because that's what he liked. And I think it did come up with some neat stuff that's unique to the genre.
Well, that's why I asked if, you know, this was how you've been playing it. Because, you know, this part, it is. So there's some drum parts that are very unorthodox. And this makes complete sense now. You know, it's almost like prog drum parts.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Again, that's another thing that I loved about ska punk bands. A lot of times you'd be like, they sound different because of this reason. You know, it's the sum of a band, and that's what makes it so awesome. Right after these lyrics in the bridge, it's followed by eight bars of the same progression, but the horns are now back playing a brand new melody. This might be my favorite part of the song because you end it with it.
Right.
It comes back later. I love this horn bust that happens there. We also, halfway through this eight bars here with the horns, there's a spoken word. And I have no idea. I did my best to decipher it, Colin. I think that Dave is saying, I don't know, man. It ain't go down like that.
I don't think that's it either, but
okay.
Can I listen?
I want you to listen.
It is something like it ain't going down like that. Something, is that what you said?
I don't, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is that.
I don't know, man. It ain't going down like that.
Yeah, it sounds good for me. Sure.
That sounds completely ad-lib, like maybe he was just in front of the mic and just wanted to say something during that part, which, as you know, especially early days, anything kind of went in the studio if it was fun, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
I think you guys were just under the influence of beer when you wrote this. It doesn't really have to do with beer, except you maybe were drinking it.
Oh, absolutely.
Right at the end of the bridge, we get a very spirited "Here we go again" that launches chorus three. Chorus three, drums, bass, and clean guitar. But the horns are now present, playing along with the Whoa-Oh Gang vocals.
Here we go again!
Get that Whoa-Oh Gang vocal. Don't let them take it all away. Gang vocal, it's getting harder every day. Gang vocal, brothers, sisters, hear me say. Gang vocal, don't let them take it all away. Followed by four no's in a row that happened four times. This gang vocal that continues to repeat another round after that underneath the lead vocal that says, never, never will they take it all away. Never, never will they take it all away. And I wanted to mention, Colin, the bridge part, the other influence. I never, ever thought this about you guys, but just Dave's delivery, the way that he's kind of rapping these parts, reminds me a little bit of fellow Michiganders, Jay Navarro from the Suicide Machines in that part.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool to go back and, you know, sometimes connect the dots, like, oh, these bands are playing together then, or kind of an influence. But again, I never noticed that. I never would ever pick that out and say, oh, you know, he sounds kind of a little bit like Dickie here, like right. Jay here. You guys always just sound like Mustard Plug to me, but I've never taken one of your songs and put it under the microscope like this either. Right after chorus three, we get an outro for eight bars. It's just drums. And again, it makes so much sense now, the rush and the clutch and some of the influences that you said were going on with Nick with the drums.
Yep.
The outro, again, eight bars, just drums, and that horn hook again from the bridge. Halfway through, there is a single bass guitar note hit as well as a bass guitar note hit on the last notes. And then the last thing you hear is kind of the horns left and right kind of just goofing off a little bit as we go into the distance. This was the last track on the record, and we're going back, geez, how many years now? 27 years since you guys recorded this. What did you think when you got the mixes back, in particular of Beer? You know, because this just sounds like, to me, in all fairness, it had been 4 years since you released Big Daddy Multitude in 93. Played a ton of shows. But I remember hearing this, like, wow, it's a different band. Were you guys stoked?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it was our first time ever in, like, I'll call it a real studio. I mean, the Big Daddy was a real studio, but it wasn't, like, there was nothing tied to it of anything that, like, we connected with, like, country bands or just, like, basic bands would go there. But there was nothing, like, they weren't familiar with punk rock or dirty guitars or anything like that. So this was the first time we'd only ever really gone there. So this is the first time doing anything else with people that understood what we were trying for. So like getting the mixes back was just like, whoa, this sounds like what we think we sound like, you know, when we're practicing or whatever, but better,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
But like, this is what like when we got Big Daddy, it still doesn't sound like us really. Like, it's really clean and it sounds great, but it just doesn't, it's missing something that is there when we played live or whatever. And this sounds closer to like the punky ska band that we had in our heads or whatever like that. So for us, it was just like, wow.
That's the last thing that I have written here. It's crazy that you said that. Was And that was the reason I didn't want to go with Mr. Smiley from the first record. I love that song. That's like Mustard Plug classic. But I went with this one because of the production. I felt like this sounds more like your band to me. And of course, you know, the fact that Bill and Stefan worked on, I knew there'd be some good talking points there. And we just got to work with Bill. And of course, you know, those guys are my heroes too. So yep. there was a lot to connect with there. But man, great catching up with you. Thank you for sitting in. And before you go, what's up with the plug?
Actually, I had a couple of tidbits of info. I don't know if you want them for the other part, but just useful information.
Yeah.
This record was the first ska record that Bill and them had ever done. So we were their first foray into horns and clean guitar.
Wow.
So that was an entirely new experience for them. Like, they went and bought mics for horns and stuff when we, you know, showed up, and they're like, we got to figure out how to record this stuff. We've never done this before. So the whole album was a very new experience for them as much as us. So I always think that's kind of an interesting thing, because they've done lots of ska punk records since then. But at that point, Bill had never, at least he said he had never recorded, you know, horns and stuff like that. So that was kind of cool bit.
Yeah.
And then the other tidbit I was going to say was, as far as songwriting, this era, which I'm sure you're familiar with, was like, back then we all wrote very together. Like, you know, we wrote as a band. Like, everyone was always together most of the time. Like, there wasn't really good ways to demo stuff. So like, everything was like when Dave's writing the lyrics, like, he's kind of writing them with us and stuff like that. And we're throwing out ideas like at practice, you know, three times a week or whatever. Whereas today you just do it at home and bring it and be like, this is how it is, do it, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if that has anything to do with anything, but I thought those were...
No, it does. And I miss those days of all of us being in a room doing it. It's difficult now. I don't know. I think we had more time to waste back then, you know, like, we'd get a couple cases of beer and be in the warehouse for 7-8 hours,
right,
you know, and
for sure.
We just don't have that time, but that also goes to show of you know, you guys being road warriors and coming in and being able to just track this song and, again, not have Bill say much about it, because you've been playing it for 4 years and everybody kind of had their say in the band. And this is the song. What else are we going to do with it?
Yeah. But yeah, as far as plug stuff going, like, we've been super busy. Our record came out in September and we've just been hitting it pretty hard for a bunch of old dudes. Like, we're getting out and going all over the place. I think we're meeting up with you in Europe in July somewhere. Couple places maybe. So
yes, I saw that. Yeah,
so that'll be fun. We haven't been that direction in, I don't know, 15 years or something. Like, it's been way too long.
Oh wow.
Yeah, like longer. Like, I mean, we were in Japan right in around 2020, went to Australia and stuff like that, but yeah, for some reason, like UK and Europe, we haven't been able to make it over there. So looking forward to that a lot. Yeah, just playing lots of shows. We got some other festival stuff lined up, Quebec and all over the place. I'm supposed to ask you to invite us out somewhere, so feel free to give us a shout if you need an opener. Keep us in mind. We'd love, of course, we'd love to come hang out. So always have a blast with you all. So
absolutely. Well, man, thank you so much, and tell the rest of the gang I said hello. All right.
I will, for sure. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Wake up and live a part of my dream. It's now or never. That's where I wanna go. It's now or never.
Hey everybody, I hope you all had fun with Colin Clive this week, but don't go anywhere, we got lots more Krista Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, email your best song and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. Sometimes, folks, it's the A for effort that gets you noticed here on Krista Makes a Podcast. While I like the song snippet we're about to play in a bit, it's the bio this next band sent me that got them a spot here on Band You Might Not Know this week. This is from the band GTI. Hello, we are GTI. Play fast, skate faster. Our motto, our battle cry, and how we live our lives. GTI is a three-piece punk band from Virginia that grabs influences from the Ramones, 80s street skating, and hot dogs from 7-Eleven. We play hot dog music for hot dog people. It's GTI or fucking die. Hell yeah. Here's a snippet of their song, CPC.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So, Chris, I got to just come clean and admit this was a producer fail, and I'll tell you why. You changed the song on me, what song you were going to do this episode. I had sent you notes already, and then I was leaving for tour, and I wanted to get you all the notes and everything. And so I hurried up and Googled the lyrics and just sent them to you. Usually, I double-check because earlier in our podcast days, I would just send you the lyrics and not check them, but I do double check them now. And what's crazy about it is I knew that lyric. I knew what it was. Not one pint, not one drop. I knew that because I, this is funny, man. I told Colin this. I saw Mustard Plug play at Club Laga back in the day in Pittsburgh. I literally skanked on stage to this song. And I know my friend PJ is listening because we always laugh like, hey, remember we skanked on stage during Mustard Plug at Club Laga? And I know this song. I knew that lyric there. And when you guys are doing that, I should have butt in and say, hey, this lyric is this. But it was funny seeing you guys figure it out. But sorry.
Well, I had jokingly threw you under the bus, but Chris, in all fairness, I went to like, I don't know, 7 or 8 different lyric sites. They all said the same thing. I, you know, it was hard to discern, so hard that Colin had to go listen to the CD during the episode and try to figure this out. I love that him and I both at the same time at some point said, I think it was after the first verse, like, but this song isn't about beer.
I mean, it's a song that was recorded, you know, 25, 30 years ago. It was written years before that. It was a live show staple that I doubt. I mean, I have songs like this. You have songs like this. You don't think about it anymore. It's just something that exists. You know, when a song's been around that long.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's awesome. They already knew the song resonated with their audience based on earlier recording of it and the live shows. And they went into the studio with people that they, I guess the word is, looked up to musically, just like you did, the Descendants guys. And they knew they were going to make the best possible recording of it. And people already love the song. So it's a great scenario going into a recording experience.
It is. And for as seasoned as I thought Bill and Stefan were as producers this time, they were in their infancy. They really had only been producing records, you know, Descendants, you know, since the early 80s. And, you know, they were touring mostly behind those records, you know, so they weren't in the studio a lot. And then later they produced some stuff. But Mustard Plug were definitely, they were the horn guinea pigs. I mean, these guys were out buying horn mics when they knew the band was coming to record, as they had never recorded horns before.
That is a wild thing to think about because it's such a, it's such another world of something to record. If you are, like you said, in the infancy of learning the ins and outs of recording, to record a horn as opposed to a guitar or a bass or even drums, it has to be an entire other skill set. So the fact that they were the guinea pigs for that, that's pretty cool. I mean, now I know they've recorded you guys, and I'm sure that they've recorded a lot of other ska punk bands along the way.
They have. The big band, I mean, they've done like 7 or 8 Kamuri records.
Oh, really?
At Blasting Room. Yeah, and Kamuri, I think that it may have been because of Mustard Plug that they ended up going out there and recording. I could be wrong on that, but it wasn't long after Mustard Plug recorded there that they were, Kamuri was next in line.
I'm always surprised at the bands I learn. I swear there's like one band a month I learn that recorded you know, with Bill. And I was like, never knew they recorded with Bill back in the day. Oh, this band, I really like Audio Karate. Uh-huh. We did some tours with them back in the day.
Yep.
Always loved the way their recording sounded and everything. But I'm like, oh, that's Bill Stevenson. That's awesome. That makes sense. That's why I love this so much. Well, the band was great, but I'm saying, like, it makes sense why I love the recording so much.
Yeah. I had said to Colin, you know, I had to cut myself off and jump into the song because I could have talked to him. I hadn't, you know, had a chance to sit down with him one-on-one in a hot minute. And we could have talked for 2 hours. But what an exciting time, early 90s, and just getting to hear about these different bands. It was crazy because, again, pre-internet, and you're sitting there going, how does this band 1,200 miles from me kind of sound like us? It's because we were all listening to the same stuff, man. We were immersed in it.
I was immersed in it too, Chris, and I was laughing because just like I started with that story about like, hey, I skanked on stage, probably to this song, definitely to Mustard Plug. Dude, I have also skanked on stage to Less Than Jake. Do you remember where I did that?
Was it
a couple times I did actually.
What, was it on the 2019 tour we did? Did you do it on that one too?
Yeah, I did it. That was a lot of like, no offense to any cities out there, it was a lot of B markets on that run we did.
Yeah.
But we did a West Virginia show where I came on and skanked for the whole.
Oh.
Dude, that was a workout. And I did it back in the day after some drinks. I think I brought this up to you before. I did it at Bogart's in Cincinnati.
Wow.
In my boxers.
Oh.
I came out.
I don't recall Bogart's with the boxers, but I do recall playing Memphis on that tour. That was a stinker.
Yeah. That's, you know, we had a good time. But I also have skanked on stage for Real Big Fish. So Mustard Plug, Less Than Jake, Real Big Fish. I've skanked on stage for three big ska bands. I think that's a pretty good record, right?
Well, I've never skanked on stage to any of those bands, but I have skanked on stage to the Punchline on your stage during The Boat.
Did you?
Yeah, you don't recall me coming out for just I skanked for a little bit. I was just kind of joking around.
Wow.
Yeah?
Wow.
Yeah. Who knew?
I can't remember anybody skanking to Punchline. I love that it's Chris from Less Than Jake who has skanked to Punchline. We had a blast on that boat. And I had a blast watching you guys and listening to this episode today, Chris. This was great. It was like old friends getting together and talking music, and I love these kind of episodes.
Absolutely. I love my man, Colin. And hey, go check out our supporting cast, which is our VIP program. You can get extra bonus episodes from Chris and I each week. Head over to chrisdemakes.com. chrisdemakes.com. You can hear more of Chris and I give you crazy, I don't know, anecdotes, facts, stuff about the main episode every Monday. We talk about a little bit of everything. chrisdemakes.com. Go check it out. And go check out the Krista Makes a Podcast Instagram page. Krista Falias is putting up a ton of great clips and content on there. I'm sure you will enjoy it. And give Chris a follow on Instagram at Krista Falias and me as well at Less Than Chris D. Want to thank my old friend Colin Clive from Mustard Plug for sitting in the hot seat today. And we'll catch you next week.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolate.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are The Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.